right, folks, we've been cleared for takeoff. Give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now and give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now, get ready to go. She ain't moving slow, she's taking control. Pushing the pedal through the floor. I'm begging for more, you better hold on tight.
And welcome to Alouette's Flight Deck, podcast dedicated to Montreal Alouettes football. I'm Tim Capper, along with Cliffy D. How was your week one?
I can't complain. I managed to pull a Tim Capper and hop on a plane to go see some football.
Nice. You actually, I think you did tell me, but I had totally forgotten. Then I saw you on Twitter that you're heading off to investor group, and I was like, oh, okay, lucky guy. So before we talk about this week's game and whatnot, give me your impressions of Investors Group, and how were you treated as an Alouettes fan in the bomber country?
You know what? I got to say, I was actually treated a lot better than the last time I went. I went to a game in 2009. You may remember that the Alouettes had gone 15-3 that year. Mm-hmm. That was one of the three games, unfortunately, where the Alouettes had lost.
Okay.
But by that point, the Alouettes had sewn up the Eastern Division, and Adrian McPherson was actually the quarterback who started that game. And it wasn't that he didn't play well. It's just that they played like a team that had already clinched the division and were doing everything they can not to get hurt.
Right.
So there was no AC for that game.
Right.
Ben Cahoon, I think, played long enough to extend his reception streak, and then that was about it.
Okay.
Aside from that, it was a game to forget. And the one thing I do remember at that game was at Canada in Stadium. And the fans were not hostile per se, but they made it clear that, you know, in case I wasn't watching the game for whatever reason, they made it very clear who was winning and who was losing. So this time around, it was I was prepared for anything. I thought, okay, I'm going there. I'm repping my team. I'm going to have my gear on. I'm ready to go. And bring it on. That's what I say. Bring it on. I'm not afraid of any sort of repercussions for walking behind enemy lines and supporting my team. There's just no way I'm going to do that. There's no way I'm going to duck and hide or anything like that. That's just not my style.
Right, right.
So walking in there, and thankfully I wasn't the only Alouettes fans there. I was surrounded with a couple of other wonderful folks that joined me on this adventure. Mm-hmm. And I got to say, you get the occasional cat call, you know, a little bit of razzing here and there, and hey, it's all good, man. That's what I'm here for.
But, like some Putin remark and something like that, right?
I got to say, a lot of people, it was like, you guys are going down tonight, or you suck, or anything like that. Like, okay, I can handle that. I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah,
I was pleasantly surprised because there was no anything insulting about French or anything insulting about the city of Montreal or anything like that. Like, there was no, you know, it was just, you know, a little bit of, you know, busting of chops and things like that. I mean, it was all in good fun, I'd say. I mean, I don't think anyone was going to really start anything, not the first game of the season. I wouldn't call this, wasn't like the Banjo Bowl or the Labor Day Classic or anything like that.
Yeah, but you don't think it would have been a little bit different now? You know, props to, obviously, to our rabid fans over in Ryderville. Do you think it might have been just a tad different if you had gone to Ryderville for a game dressed in Alouettes red, white, and blue? Seriously?
Well,
I mean,
I'll tell you what, Tim, I'm actually going to Regina in October, so I'll let you know.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah, I'll find out what it's like. I don't think it'll be that bad when I head to the Ottawa game in Ottawa in mid August. So we'll see what that's like. Yeah, I've never been to Mosaic, so it's like, sometimes do you really want to go into the enemy's backyard with another team's colors? Because you hear stuff that happens, not necessarily here, but you know, if you go into somebody else's house, you know, especially European soccer, and you're wearing the wrong jersey. Yeah, no.
Yeah. But again, I think at the end of the day, and you're going to get the occasional drunken lout that's going to want to start something, mm-hmm. and, you know, that's all good, whatever. I think at the end of the day, there's so many great fans throughout Canada of the CFL, and at the end of the day, we're all here to watch a game. We're all here to enjoy some real, honest football, mm-hmm. and how can you get mad at that? You may not like the teams, or you may not like, you know, the opposition or anything like that, but at the end of the day, you're all there for the same thing. Let's have a few beers, let's watch some football, and let's just enjoy ourselves.
Yeah. And how was the real quickly? How was the delay? Because the way that I saw it on television, it really did not look all that bad at first. Then they kept popping back in, and you know, during the broadcast to show us what was going on there. Because I was very surprised to see, you know, from when they put the game onto hold. When did you start seeing the worst of the weather?
To be honest with you, I was a little surprised when they all of a sudden the referees had just got on and announced that there was lightning being reported in the area, so they're pulling the teams off the field and escorting everybody out of the stadium for their safety. Well, not out of the stadium, but they had told the fans to make their way to the concourse because of the potential for lightning. And I'm looking around like, I haven't seen any lightning. Like, the clouds were a little dark, but right. nothing too serious. And then all of a sudden, yeah, lightning. And then basically security coming along is like, okay, you got to get out of here. I'm like, okay, well, this is the first for me. I've seen games in bitter cold. I've been in games where it was snowing, torrential downpour of rain, mm-hmm. Pretty much any sort of weather condition you can think of, with the exception of a tornado.
Right.
I've pretty much watched a football game in it. Like, for a game to be postponed or delayed as a result of lightning, this is uncharted territory for me. This is something I will not soon forget, let me tell you.
Oh, I'm sure. And it's, I'm sure, very prairie-ish type of weather where all of a sudden it just comes out of nowhere, because we've seen our fair share of weird weather in the CFL. So it's, I'm sure we've gone through it ourselves too. So it's, you know, we just either happen to be undercover at Percival Molson or we get to watch it on TV and the other fans have to deal with it. You know, the teams that are basically outside now, but, to let everybody know, that we have an interview this week, besides our normal, Just the Stats segment. I was lucky enough to be able to speak with Alouettes president and CEO Mark Waitman, and we will have that interview very shortly for you, and hope you guys stay tuned. But obviously we want to talk about what happened this week, because I'm sure going into the Winnipeg game and it being the first game of the season, both you and I had our apprehension, and we weren't really sure. We were very high on the season just by seeing what they did in the preseason. But as both you and I know, the preseason really doesn't mean anything, because you are trying to get the players that are there that the coaches want to see and to be able to get the reps in. So it was the type of thing that we weren't sure really what was going to happen, even though we had high hopes. Overall, I think, you know, obviously the Alouettes won 22-14. They held Winnipeg scoreless in the first half. Even though the Alouettes could have had more points at halftime, which we will talk about here in a little bit. But basically the nuts and bolts of it was Kevin Glenn was 30 of 42 for 332 yards, one interception, one touchdown. Leading rusher for the Owls was Tyrell Sutton, 15 carries, 66 yards, almost had a TD. Leading wide receiver for the Owls as far as yards go, welcome back to Ron Carter. 8 receptions, 96 yards. Overall, I think we got the offensive output that we really wanted, because over the past couple of years, it's just a matter of not necessarily when they're going to score, Cliff, but which quarter of which game are they going to score?
Absolutely. And again, this was going to be – this season for sure is going to be the litmus test as far as Anthony Calvillo, the coach. It's his show now. This is his baby, and he's got to nurture it and help it grow. I mean, he's got to get these players, these offensive players, to buy into what he's going to be selling them. And the best way to do that, of course, is to put the plan in action, and the results will speak for themselves.
Right.
And in this case, yeah, it wasn't perfect by any means. I think we talked about it earlier. Mm-hmm. It really felt like this first game was still – it still had that sort of preseason-ish feel to it, as they're still trying to work out any last-minute kinks or whatever. And you could tell right away, like, this wasn't exactly a high-powered offense to start with. But once they managed to establish the rhythm, once Kevin Glenn settled down, the offensive line, for the most part, did a fairly good job of keeping him upright. The fact that he wasn't sacked at all this game is nothing short of it's just a positive sign right there.
Oh, it's positive too. But you know what? To me, that's not really much of a surprise, considering how well. Well, no, actually, no sacks. Yes, sacks that the Owls got. I think they got 5 on the night. Yeah, I will admit the O line did their job versus the Blue Bombers, and you know what? I think you were going to say it, but you weren't going to say it. You mentioned that the game looked sloppy, and I wanted to ask you because you mentioned that I think in your alternative piece this week. What made you? Mind you, you were there watching the game live, but what was the reason behind using the word sloppy in your mind?
To me, it just came down to little mistakes here and there, and just like I said, I really got the sensation like over the past couple of years that every time Montreal does something that is fantastic and they manage to build a bit of positive momentum, something comes along where they just, like I said, they just can't stop stepping on their own toes. Right. And just something just sort of falls apart at the last minute and it just doesn't quite execute the way it should. Mm-hmm. And again, maybe we're spoiled because of the great Alouettes teams of the past. And we have to remind ourselves, this is very much still a rebuilding year. Like, this is still very much a work in progress for the Alouettes. So maybe I'm being a little harsh on them, but at the same time, just again, we left a ton of points on the field. There's no denying that. I mean, unfortunately, Tyrell Sutton, I think the world of him. He's a tremendous rusher. I would not be surprised at all to see him competing for the league leader as a rushing champion again.
Right.
But you got to protect the ball, man. You got to hang on with both hands if you're going to try and score
right.
a touchdown.
Right. And you were talking about how we just throughout the last couple of years, we've just been basically lulled into, oh, geez, here we go again. And I will, man. You're talking about specifically about Chris Randall, the Blue Bombers, where, I mean, the guy had two defensive stops against the Owls, and both of them were in the red zone. I mean, yeah, the interception off of Glenn. And as you said, yeah, you had the fumble recovery and the strip fumble recovery. Also from Tyrell Sutton. I mean, it's the first half itself, easily, at least another 10 points could have been on the board, and the Owls could easily have blown this game open by halftime, because it just seems that for whatever reason, I think Winnipeg had less than 100 yards of total offense in the first half alone, if I remember the stats correctly.
And Drew Willey was just being ragdolled the whole evening by Montreal. Like, their defensive line just... they came to eat, and unfortunately, what was on the menu? It was Drew Willey.
Do you think that Drew was trying to take it easier, not to, because we know how Drew Willey's unfortunate seasons have gone, in the most recent past. Do you think it is an idea, just something that where he's like, okay, it's in the back of his mind, I just do not want to get hurt. Do you think that was messing with his game? Or was it just a matter of the Owls were more in sync with each other, both offensive and defensively, or was it some other thing?
I'd say that for the most part, Willie may have been a little bit of apprehension, but he'll never admit that for sure. Like, at the end of the day, he's going to put on a brave face and just say, you know what, they were just a better team. But I mean, Montreal's defense is, and I've said this a million times, and I'll say it a million more. Under Noel Thorpe, they are a well-oiled machine. And what better proof did you see than this past Friday as far as, you know, just complete dominance as far as the defense goes? I mean, like, it wasn't till towards the end where things just sort of – it kind of took their foot off the pedal a little bit, and that's what allowed Willie to finally connect with Darvin Adams for a 63-yard touchdown, which
what
was –
what a catch, though. Oh,
oh my. Oh. And that was right almost in my face practically.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Where I was seated was – you just had I had a clear view of everything. I just see, like, oh, come on. And then he catches it, shakes off his defender, rookie cornerback Ethan Davis, playing his first professional CFL game. And, there was no one else there. So, I mean, they literally caught the Alouettes napping, which I'll tell you right now, I think everybody gets one. That was yours, Winnipeg, because I guarantee you, and especially Ottawa is going to learn this on Thursday, you're not going to let the Alouettes – The Alouettes are not going to burn you like that again. I can promise you that. I think they've done their homework now. You caught them that one time. Good on you. But they're going to be prepared for it now.
I just seem to, in most recent seasons, us as Alouette fans, we're looking at how the games go throughout the year. And, you know, the Owls will get a lead. And we've seen it before. You know, we've seen the Alouettes blow a 24-point first quarter lead. You know, most recently it was done to Calgary a few years back. You get a little worried as a fan, and you start saying, please do not take your foot, as you're saying, don't take your foot off the gas. You got to keep this thing going, whether it be offensive and defensively. You know, the defense can't just do everything. You got to be able to do something when it comes to the offensive side of the ball. So it's, Speaking of the defensive side of the ball, you know, everybody was talking about, you know, all the roster cuts that we had at the end of training camp. What was your first reaction to our new DBs?
For the most part, they played pretty well. Jonathan Mincy ended up slotting in instead of Greg Henderson, and I think this kid plays a little hard. He did a very good job defending because I didn't notice any glaring mistakes or anything that he did. Right. I mean, he wasn't outstanding either. I actually think he got a little bit overshadowed by, of all people, Billy Parker, the old guy, quote unquote. he had himself a game this year, or this past Friday.
Yeah,
I got nothing but good things to say about Billy in that regards. But Mincy played pretty well. Like I said, so did Ethan Davis for the most part. Like I said, unfortunately. Yeah, you're going to – every rookie gets that sort of oh, darn it moment. And I think that that poor coverage on Darvin Adams, that was his moment. And I'm sure he'll be the first to say, you know what, that was my bad. I learned from it. And I really hope that he did. I think that Drew Willey taught him a very valuable lesson. Cover your man.
Yeah,
that's all you have to do. I mean, you have one job when you're a defensive back.
Yeah.
Cover your man.
And I think, if I'm not mistaken, originally I think I heard this during the broadcast that they originally had both of the newbies on, both on the weak side, but they ended up switching them up, so you had a veteran presence, as you said, like a Billy Parker on one side, so you had somebody to lean on to just in case that was the case, right? They were both on the weak side, I think, originally, and then it was switched up that one would be on one would be on the other.
Yeah, and it also allowed Jovan Johnson to he actually ended up playing halfback a little bit himself too, which he'd never played in his career before. He was always a cornerback.
Right.
So it was a bit of a learning experience for him as well, which is good because, again, he's got the veteran presence for sure. And having someone like that on the field for these young pups, that's going to pay off huge. I mean, it's like having a coach on the field with you. So you can't put a price tag on that. But I think it was also a bit of a learning experience for Johnson as well, because, like I said, he'd never played that position before. And again, there was no glaring mistakes. There was no moment like, what are you doing? Like, there was.
Yeah, there were none of those, I will admit. Yeah. What about, first talking about the guy, the DBs, I think there was a comment that was made. They're talking about, oh, you're going to, you know, these are rookies. And I can't remember who said it. I don't know if it was on the TSN panel or if it was during the actual broadcast itself. It's like, you know, everybody's been a rookie. Everybody's been a rookie. You need to give these guys a chance to be able to get the games under their belt. And for all we know, one of these guys will become the next Billy Parker. It's very possible. So they just have to give them, I guess, give them at least a chance. Let fans give them a chance. Let's see how they do. Sure, it's only one game in the books. You got a big game coming up this week versus Ottawa. So it's, I know it's a cliche, Cliff. Game by game. Give everything 100%. Blah, 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 blah. I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
But you're absolutely right. I mean, like I said, Billy Parker, he was a raw rookie at one point. Jovan Johnson was a raw rookie at one point.
Yeah.
When he was playing for the Alouettes, Gerald Brown was a rookie at one point. But you know what? When you start talking about elite Alouette ball hawks, like guys like Parker, Gerald Brown, Mark Estelle, like these are names that for the longest time, those were like the elite defensive backs and corners in this game, not just for the Alouettes, but for the entire league. And it didn't happen overnight. Like, these guys had to put their time in. They took their lumps as well. And again, these rookies too, they're going to have their lunch eaten for them every once in a while. And again, that's part of the learning process. Like, the only way you're going to get better is to go through all these trials and tribulations. And like I said, for the most part, we'll see how the rest of the season goes naturally. But I think for the most part, these youngsters, they're going to do okay. I think they're going to be just fine.
Yeah. If you were to give a particular game ball, we can start doing this. It's something that maybe we will do each week. If you were to give a specific game ball to somebody, offensive, defensively, coach, whatever, who would you give the game ball to this week?
No question. On defense, it had to be Billy Parker. I mean, like I said, he was all over the field, played with a chip on his shoulder. And like I said, he was responsible for a lot of the action that was going on. And just leading by example, like that's the best way to describe it, is, you know, he took these kids by the hand and said, okay, we're going to go, let's do this. And he was outstanding on offense. I hate to sound like Terrell Owens here, but Kevin Glenn, that's my quarterback, man. He was just, everybody was betting against him. Everyone was betting against the Alouettes. But what did Kevin Glenn do? Nothing. It's okay. Let the haters hate. He went out there and he performed. Was he perfect? By no stretch of the imagination, was he perfect.
No.
I mean, like I said, there was a lot of things that didn't click. There was a lot of things that could be fine-tuned, I guess we could say, be a little bit better. But, I mean, overall, he did a great job of finding his receivers. He found SJ. He found Duron. He almost found Kenny Stafford in the end zone, too. But, you know, things happen. At the end of the day, though, Kevin Glenn, you can see why we've got faith in him. You can see why this Alouettes coaching staff has faith in him. He's got that veteran presence. He's got the experience. He's been there. He's done that. He's got the t-shirt. He knows what needs to be done. So if just step back, all right, go ahead, KG. Show me what you got. Yeah, and look at that.
And it's true.
He ends up doing it.
It's true. He's getting a lot of slack. A lot of slack. Even they're talking about it on the new TSN online segment this week with the panel. You know, okay. So Kevin Glenn doesn't happen to have, by the way, as far as offensive, game balls, mine was going to Kevin Glenn too, by the way. Just a matter of fact of basically, if he's able to put these people in their place and get people to shut up, you know, he is a veteran quarterback. It so happens that he may have come in a few times, as a backup. Yeah, sure. You know, does that mean that he's not a starting quarterback? No, it doesn't mean at all. I mean, he is a starting quarterback. Just look what he did this week. Sure, he may not have the accolades like some of the other quarterbacks and Grey Cup winning quarterbacks that are in the CFL. But man, Cliff, the guy has almost 50,000 yards. And if anybody really wants to question this, all I got to tell you is this. I really have one thing to say. Dan Marino, one of the most, you know, talked about and one of the, I mean, think about Dan Marino. One of the best quarterbacks in the NFL history, but he doesn't have a ring. That doesn't mean that he was a crappy quarterback. Mm. You know, to be fair, yeah, you know, Marino was a starter for most of his career, but so what? He had 50,000 yards. So it's my other game ball. I'm going to go ahead actually, and I could give it to quite a few people, but I'm going to go ahead and give it to Coach Pop, just for the fact that with the win versus Winnipeg. Cliff, it was actually Coach Pop's first season opening win as a head coach in the, I think it was four, what is it? How many times has Pop been head coach for the Owls?
This is his fourth go around, yeah.
Yeah. So it is, I'll give it to him. It's his first season opening game since 2007 when he was the coach through the entire year. So I'm going to give it to Coach Pop. But I'm sure there are many others that I could be giving it to. Just for those who happen to not watch the broadcast or happen to not see the news, longtime CFL vet, Nick Lewis, he reached, 12,000 career receiving yards in his career this past week. And, SJ Green, he passed another well-known name in Alouettes history, Jamel Richardson. He passed him for fourth in Alouettes history when it comes to receiving yards. So props to you guys. You know, just keep it going. I mean, look at Duron Carter this week, thrown to 11 times, 8 catches. SJ Green, thrown to 9 times, 5 catches. It looks good. I mean, it's sure, there are things that we can question, but, you know, it's day one, and I think it'll be a huge test for the team coming up on Thursday, but we will talk about that a little bit. But first, I was given the pleasure of interviewing Alouettes CEO and President Mark Waitman, and when we get back from the interview, we will catch you up on everything else when it comes to the game this week, and we'll talk about a lot more. Well, on the line with us now is the Alouettes President and CEO, Mark Waitman. Hey, Mark, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure to be here, Tim.
We have to at least ask. I mean, there are many people who look at your position with the team, you know, CEO and president, and they're wondering, when it comes to an off season, what do you as the president and CEO have to go through before we reach the new season coming up?
Well, first of all, it's a myth. There is no such thing as an off season in our business. Players, they have an off season in the sense that they're not on the field performing, but they usually get to work very quickly as soon as the season's over to start, you know, working out and building up their bodies for the following season. So, but in same can be said about us on the business side of things. You know, everything from our renewal strategy and implementation for our season ticket holders to developing and finalizing our deals with our partners and sponsors. We do, as you know, a lot of activities in the community, starting with our school program, and also a lot of our amateur football initiatives. Most of those all take place in that off season. You know, last year we had well over 100 school visits between January and April in different high schools throughout the Montreal area, and throughout the province for that matter, and the Anthony Cavillo Academy and the Bruno Eppel Elite Football School. These are all things that it's not the off season, it's just another season. And keeps us tremendously busy, but also you're building towards that next year. Jim's working on building the team on the field, and we're also working hard at creating a lot of new and fun things in the stands in the stadium, so that when fans come to the stadium, they see something new from the previous year. You got to keep renewing yourself and getting improving that game experience, and whether it be part of the tailgate parties that we've developed and continue to evolve, or the new terrace we have in the West End Zone for standing room only to offer $20-$25 tickets, which are very affordable tickets in this day and age. I'm not sure if you've heard about even like the new express passes we have for improving our concession experience and getting fans an opportunity to get served quicker and get special deals. And so all these things, they take weeks and months and sometimes years to plan and to put into place. And so clearly a very busy off season for us year in and year out.
No, I'm sure. When we talk about the fans themselves, I mean, how was the season ticket base this year for the Alouettes? Is there an increase or a decrease, or are they at the numbers that you would like to see them at?
No, they're not. I'd like them to be a little higher. We've continued working on that. We've had a few years in a row now of disappointing results on the field, so that always makes it a little tougher no matter what sport you're
right.
in. We're hovering around 11,000 season memberships all in for 2016. That is down from about 12 the year before. So it's a slight decrease that we're not happy about, that, but that we understand, unfortunately, in the same way. When you look at again the results you had on the field last year and whatnot. However, very encouraged to see that our group sales are projected to be up fairly significantly this year. Our individual ticket sales are up in the 20-something% so far. So so far we're expecting similar crowds to what we had last year.
Right.
But as we see the season unfold. And if we continue to have some exciting games that we had last Friday in Winnipeg, we're quite convinced that we'll be seeing some really good crowds as the season rolls around. We're still going to have fantastic crowds. Last year we had a disappointing season, and we still had the single largest increase percentage-wise in attendance throughout the CFL, and that was in a disappointing season. So we're looking at a lot of the same this year. We had an average of almost 21,400, if I'm not mistaken, last year. So those are great crowds, and we're very fortunate to have such diehard fans that are very passionate about their Owls, and that means when things go well, they support us, and when things go bad, they let us hear it. And
yeah,
that's part of the business.
There are a lot of new things that the team introduced this year. I think it was upwards of 15 new things that the team announced. But I know you mentioned some of them a little bit earlier. One in particular, and I think this is one of the few things that the team has gotten a lot of flack for, but it seems that there has been some sort of resolution, and it is the new security measures that the team has introduced this year.
That's right.
What was the reasoning behind making it not necessarily a little bit harder to get into Percival Molson Stadium, but what were the reasons behind increasing the security like the team did?
Well, we definitely don't want to make it harder to get in, because we want people to be able to walk up to the stadium and walk in without having an unreasonable wait time and whatnot to enter a stadium and get to their seats and watch the game. But unfortunately, in this day and age, in 2016, with all the things that are going on in the world, we need to make sure that our first priority is to make sure that we're providing a safe environment for all of our fans to come to our games and to not have to worry about the safety and conditions of the stadium when they are there in their seats enjoying the games. And so we have added a few different security measures just to assure that. Our fans, we've never had any issues in the past, and our fans have been fantastic not only respecting security measures, but just being a pleasant group so that to create a nice family atmosphere. But at that first game, like any time you have a behavioral change that's being asked to be made, and especially, despite communications, sometimes people don't always fully comprehend the changes that are being asked of them. And so We had a few delays getting into the game at the preseason game, and a few adjustments have been made on our side as well,
right,
as far as making sure the security personnel are going to be adjusting and facilitating that access. And I think we'll be fine for this Thursday. We've made sure to over-communicate what those changes are. We've adjusted a few of the things, including the size of the bags, so that people can come in with backpacks, as many of them have always done.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we'll be in good measure for this Thursday.
That's good. That's good. And it's also a good thing to have. I think it was only about 14K and change for the preseason games. It was a good run through for the first time, right?
Well, you know, it's preseason for everybody, unfortunately. And so you got to, you know, you try out sometimes on the field, you're trying out new plays, and in the stands or on the operational side, you're trying out sometimes new measures and new things. And sometimes they work out perfectly, and sometimes you need to adjust. And this is one of those where we made sure to listen to what our fans were telling us and observe what went well, because some things did go well and some things needed to be adjusted, and that's what we've done. And you know, we've had a lot of fans as well that have reached out to us and asking us, so what are we going to be doing as far as security measures at the stadium and making sure that we're maintaining that safe environment for everyone. And so we've gotten a lot of positive feedback, mm-hmm, as well, saying, look, this is going to be growing pains, but thank you for doing this, because this is what we expect as far as making sure that we're keeping up with, you know, the times when it comes to security measures. But obviously some were a little disappointed with. I think really where it's been particularly tough is getting the communication out. And so even just talking about it right now with you, Tim, is going to help to make sure that people understand that, try to show up a little bit early.
Right.
And, you know, like every other stadium in North America, you know, if you come in with a bag, we have to, you know, check it and make sure what you're bringing, mm-hmm, in and making sure that everything is safe so that people can enjoy the game.
Yeah, and you wouldn't think that the security before was being lax. This was just changing security for a sign of the times, right?
No, exactly. Yes, exactly. Like, if you look at, even if you just look at the impact on the Habs in the last couple of years, they have, they've added, you know, metal detectors at the door and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that we never would have thought of, you know, 5-10 years ago, let alone further back than that. And I do think that there's a lot of that is directed through the league office, and you know, especially in leagues that are based out of the U.S., there's a different standard there when it comes to what is acceptable as far as security measures in a public,
right,
venue. And so that overflows a little bit up here. But at the same time, you know, we're all living in the same world. We're all facing the same challenges. And so for us to be able to, that's one of the things that we've added this year, where you have the wands for the metal detector wands that are,
mm-hmm,
very quick,
yes,
non-invasive, not, you know, it's very easy to do and doesn't slow anything up, but is an extra step that we have added to that, to the security.
Yeah, and I'll be one of the ones that would tell you immediately that I was a proponent of what you guys had done. I just made a few, you know, a few suggestions myself, but the information that you guys have sent out to all the fans recently, and especially season ticket holders, it's very self-explanatory. And as I said, fans, if you got to be there early, come a little bit more earlier than you normally have, and just get ready for the home opener. That's all we can say, right?
Well, that's right. And the best way to show, I mean, if you show up a little early, come out to the tailgate. Our, mm-hmm, tailgate is building. It's been a couple years now. I mean, last year was officially the first year where we've actually been able to start building a true tailgate in every sense of the word in the park at the main entrance. And,
right,
you know, people show up a little early. That's part of the environment. That's part of the event. It's a lot of fun. And then you can, you know, get in the stadium a few minutes early before the crowd and not have any hassle. And so those are all positives. And as we're building up that culture,
right,
of getting people to come to either the fan zone in the stadium, mm-hmm, or the tailgate in the outside the stadium, it's adding to the elevated experience and been a lot of fun.
Exactly. Now, for the past 2 years, you've had, the game last year in St. Hubert, you had the opening day and whatnot, like usual, over in Sherbrooke for training camp.
Mm-hmm.
In order to generate local interest, what are the possibilities of hosting the first day and or weekend of training camp at Percival Molson?
Well, we've looked at that over the years, and sometimes it ends up just being a scheduling challenge.
Right.
You know, there's one weekend during training camp that almost every year comes in conflict with the Grand Prix, and so that's something that's a bit of a challenge for us, just to schedule a day that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, I mean, we were again this year looking at doing the intra-squad game either in St. Hubert or somewhere just in the South Shore nearby, because,
right,
we really enjoyed that last year. But what really kind of caused an unsurmountable challenge for us in this one is that the schedule unfortunately had us go to Winnipeg during the preseason.
Right.
So you lose a whole extra day and a half of travel time getting there and getting back versus just going to Ottawa and back. And during training camp, we have so little time that, you know, every hour is very precious to us as far as being able to get the practices in, get the evaluations that we need to be able to make sure we make the right choices,
right,
you know, choosing our roster. And so, yes, whether it be up at McGill or whether it be somewhere in the South Shore or anywhere else in the greater Montreal area, our objective is to have the intra-squad game somewhere that's accessible to get fans to be able to come out and see it. I mean, you've been there. I think it's a wonderful day,
yeah,
especially if you have a nice sunny, warm day. I mean, it's fantastic environment, and we want to be able to share that with our fans. We just often, and this year was a perfect example, kind of get a little squeezed when it comes to the schedule.
Which I can understand. Hey, do you know if there are going to be any plans this year to commemorate the team's 20th anniversary and their return to Montreal?
Well, it's funny you say that because we've been talking about it quite a bit, and some of the newspapers have done a bit of a feature on it.
Yeah.
It's kind of a tough one because it's, you know, technically it's 20 years ago from today, but this is our 21st season. Last year,
yeah,
was
I know,
the 20th season, so it's a little awkward that way. But we did a few things last year really too, just to sort of highlight the 20th anniversary season,
mm-hmm,
especially with our cheerleaders, and they had their special 20th anniversary commemorative book that was done last year,
right,
or calendar, I should say. And what makes it awkward for us as well, too, is that, you know, the team wasn't founded in 96. The team was founded in 46.
Good
but
point.
There was 9 years in there when we weren't here. So it's kind of like, are we 70 years old? Are we 20 years old? Are we 51 years old? It's kind of a hard one to kind of pinpoint. But at the end of the day, I think we're looking forward to just celebrating, getting back to our winning ways and finding that path into the playoffs. And we're going to focus on that. We're going to celebrate,
right,
history as well, though, with Ben Cahoon, as you know, in,
yes,
July, which is going to be particularly special for us. And looking forward to all that as well.
Yeah, and it's also true. It's very hard when it comes to these days, where when it comes to commemorating something, it seems to be the thing where it's either 20 years or it's 20 seasons, and you have to,
yeah,
you got to gauge it upon that. Now, speaking, yeah, of an anniversary, do you and McGill happen to be planning to do something to celebrate the, I think it's the 100th anniversary of Percival Molson?
It was, the 100th anniversary was actually last October. I think it was the 22nd of October,
okay,
if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah, we'd done something. I mean, it was a sort of a virtual celebration in the sense that we'd highlighted it at a game, but a lot of it was on our social media, and McGill had a little ceremony where they,
okay,
in a press release and whatnot, where they talked about that. Yeah, because it was, it's another one where the stadium was open, but then they closed it down during the war, and then they opened it up again.
Right.
It was, but yes, the 100th anniversary was last fall, in fact.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you know if there are going to be any plans to grow fan interest throughout, besides the province? Can you expand on the possibility of reaching out to CFL cities, other cities, Francophone communities?
You know what? It's funny you say that. Absolutely. I think that in this day and age, you know, more and more of what we do, and one of the beauties of technology and digital media and social media is the fact that we can create a personal relationship with fans, whether they're across the street or down or you know, at the end of the other end of the province,
right,
or even, you know, abroad,
mm-hmm,
and it gives us the opportunity to entertain that relationship. And so in a situation like ours where most Francophone fans throughout the country are predisposed to being Alouette fans, it gives us the opportunity to interact with them no matter where they are. And we have done a lot of that. And same thing when it comes to the broadcast and when it comes to RDS being available.
Right.
Traditionally, it's been available in different cities throughout Canada as well, but it is somewhat limited unless you have a special TV package.
Mm-hmm.
But now with being able to watch games even through your iPhone or iPad or whatnot, that distribution is becoming more and more accessible. And so it does give us an opportunity to reach out to those Francophone fans throughout the rest of Canada, or the rest of the world for that matter. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of football fans in Europe that follow professional football and,
right,
and are realizing that, yeah, they can follow the NFL, but they can also follow CFL and follow the Alouettes and actually have a Francophone broadcast. So whether it be in France or in Belgium or any other French-speaking country throughout the world, that's something that I think is more and more going to be on our radar. And I say our as the team, but also as the league. And the reason it's becoming more in focus on that radar is because of the digital technology that's allowing us to facilitate access to our product to right. To fans throughout the world. And the other thing that we've done, which we started last year and we intend on continuing, is you know how everybody does parties at Grey Cup every yeah. year. Well, what we've done is we changed the model last year, and what we did is we said, okay, well, we're in Winnipeg. Well, there's a huge Francophone population in St. Boniface, and so what we did is we went to St. Boniface, visited school, and did our own party there in the Francophone okay. environment in that area. So we walked in, and I kind of did an unofficial poll in the room when I got up and stood to the school, and I asked how many people in the room are Bombers fans, and a lot of people cheered, and how many people are Alouette fans, and a few people cheered, and then we did our thing, and the players came in and spoke, and Bruno Appel went in and spoke to them. And obviously, this is a Francophone school.
Right, right.
It was all done in French. And then at the end, I went back up again. I said, now let me do this poll again. And it kind of reversed, and we had more Alouette fans than we had Bomber fans. So I figured one by one, we'll convert them to becoming Alouette fans city right. by city as we go through Grey Cups throughout Canada.
One last question before I let you go, because I know you've been very nice to join us today and with your busy schedule. Can you tease anything that the team has not announced that may be coming up that the fans may want to know? Can you tease anything that the team's thinking of doing or looking to introduce this year?
What have we not announced already that we're going to do?
I don't know.
How's about this? We're planning on being 2-0.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Is that okay?
That's good.
We haven't announced it yet, but that's the plan.
How about do you know when the team may be wearing their alternate jerseys for the first time?
Oh, actually, I don't have that schedule in front of me right okay. now, but I do know that for definitely on October 2nd, because that will be the day that we'll be hosting the Canadian Armed Forces, and that is the day that we'll have the F-18s from the Alouette Squadron out of Bagotville doing a flyby.
Nice.
So that's always very popular with the fans.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the residents live nearby don't share that opinion, but yeah. the large majority of the people around, and the fans, it can be loud. It's a pretty neat experience, and that's the day we're going to have them all come out to the game, and of course, that'll be the day that we'll be wearing our alternate 425 silver jerseys or silver uniforms. So
nice.
That will be, but I do believe we might be wearing it once before then, but I don't know offhand what the date is.
Okay. Now, for anybody who hasn't gotten their tickets, you know, we do have a game coming up this Thursday. It is the home opener for the 2016 season. Mark, you got to let everybody know, how can they get their tickets?
Well, the easiest way is you call Réseau Admission, or you go on the Alouettes website, and you have a multitude of offers there. If you're a family with young kids, there's family packs out there where you can get a great deal on tickets and merchandise or food and a drink. Or if you're a large group and you want to be in the party section, or if you just want to buy 3 or 4 games for the year and get a great deal where you can pick your seats ahead of time for your games,
right.
go on our website at MontrealAlouettes.com. And many offers there, and looking forward to seeing people out at the game on Thursday. It's going to be a beautiful day.
Yep.
We're playing Ottawa. They somehow beat us 3 times out of 3 last year, and so we're looking forward to changing that trend this year.
Perfect. Well, all the luck this year, Mark. I mean, and greatly appreciated that you joined us on the show this week.
Happy to be here. Thanks for the invite, and thanks for your support, and looking forward to seeing you out at the game as well.
And once again, I want to thank Mark Waitman for joining us this week. It was very gracious of him to take time out of his busy schedule and to talk to us tonight. And even though we are a new CFL podcast, I'm glad he was able to take the time and talk with us. Anything stand out specifically though, Cliff, from what he brought up?
Well, I like the fact that he was clearly not shy. I think there's a lot of things that, as fans, we're sitting there going, what the hell? Why doesn't the team do this? Why doesn't the team do that? And we don't always get the perspective of what it's like from the other side. I'm sure they'd like these, you know, the administrative people would like to be able to do some of these things too. And maybe a lot of it is they just don't know about it, or they don't understand maybe quite how the fans feel about things. But I really got the sense in listening to Mark talk is that he's very much a fan of this game, this sport, this league as well. And he wants nothing more than this Alouettes team to thrive and blossom.
Right.
And I really get the impression from him is that there's a lot of things that he wants to do. And if he's not doing them currently, then he will eventually. It really is just a matter of timing more than anything else. And I feel confident knowing that someone as passionate, as dedicated as he is, is working for this team, and it's only going to be good things, not just for the Alouettes on the field, but off the field as well.
Right. For me, the one thing I took away is that now, I think it's probably one of the biggest, you know, one of the biggest things that was talked about during the off season, especially most recently, had to do with the new security measures that were put into place over Purse for Molson. It was nice to see that, if anybody didn't know, that originally the Alouettes were going to be charging for, if you brought in something and you couldn't bring it, they weren't allowing you to bring it into the stadium, they were going to charge a $5, wasn't really a charge, it was going to be a donation of $5 towards the Alouettes Foundation, Kids Foundation. They made modifications after talking to everybody, and they made changes to it so where it's going to be something that is now free. It just does show that the Alouettes do listen to the fans. I know there are a lot of fans out there who may feel that they've been slighted by whatever team, whichever organization, whichever front office. But I think this just actually shows that the Alouettes do listen to their fan base. And if an issue does come up, they will try to, you know, change it as best as possible. So, but hey, whoever we have next, I'm really, you and I talked about it off air, and we're not going to talk about it openly here, but we have a couple of interesting ideas that we hope to bring onto the show for future episodes. If you want to tell us who you think we should have or give us some ideas, hey, you can go ahead and email us at alouettespodcast@gmail.com. You can also go over to our Facebook page and over at Twitter. Twitter is AlouettesFLDeck, and it is Alouettes Flight Deck over on Facebook. Just let us know. We'll try our best to get those people on for you. So, home openers. Real quickly, I had to at least ask you this because a lot of people talk about this. What do you think, real quickly, about the participation ribbons that were done by the Edmonton fans for Ottawa?
Wow, that's the only thing I got to say.
It was ballsy. It was very ballsy. I will admit, it was a hilarious idea.
If you're going to troll somebody, don't half-ass it. I say go all the way.
Oh,
and I'll give props to those guys out in Edmonton. Like, they did it. They I mean, when you've got the entire league now in a lather over something as simple as participation ribbons, that's pretty epic. Like, that's going above and beyond as far as I'm concerned. And you know what? It's all in good fun.
Yes.
I mean, really, that's really what it comes down to. There's a few people that were offended by it. That's understandable. I mean, some people can take a joke, some people can't. I get it. But I as far as I'm concerned, good on you, Edmonton. Like, their fans, they're very passionate, dedicated fans out there. There's no question about that. And for them to pull off a stunt like this, it was pretty funny. I mean, I'm actually kind of glad that they didn't think of doing that in 2004, mind you. But, you know, it is what it is. I'm very thankful for that.
Think they got some very imaginative fans. And real quickly, any first thoughts or impressions on DraftKings? I don't know. Did you do it this week? I did. I went ahead and took advantage of the league's free games. I was doing fairly well, I thought, but I ended out of the money. But what about you? I mean, any impressions? Or is it just not your thing?
It's not that it's not my thing. I was so focused on the trip to Winnipeg that I just didn't really think to really sit down and check it out. But I mean, I just love the fact that there is something available for these fans. And I've actually been getting quite a few new Twitter followers that are very much into the whole daily fantasy sports thing. And I think now they're trying to get a little bit more perspective on the Canadian game. And of course, by all means, don't be shy. Like, hit me up. I'll gladly talk to you about it. I'll certainly lend as much insight as I can, not just from an Alouettes perspective, but league-wide perspective as well. And again, us here on the Flight Deck, we're here for you, the fans. I mean, if you're coming here looking for straight gambling advice, I can't promise anything. But if you're looking to get your degenerate fix on in, well, come holler at us. I'll certainly try to help you out as best I can.
Did you say if you're trying to get your Ellen DeGeneres fix in? Is that what you just said?
No. what do you mean? What are you implying?
Can't you get that? What do you mean? Everybody watches Ellen. Didn't you see Dory? Come on.
Well, that's why I got the PVR for, man.
There you go. And if you're wanting any information from when you're coming into Montreal, you know, hit us up. We'll try to give you the best spots where the places to sit is, et cetera, et cetera. Speaking of home, and home openers. We got this week. This is one telling stat, is that, you know, Cliff, this is going to be for the this is going to be our fourth starting quarterback in the four consecutive home openers. That just shows you the type of, I'm trying to be nice here, basically the
cluster fudge.
Yeah, well, the shit that we've had to endure ever since AC retired. When you have, you know, it's not like you have a Ricky Ray under center. I mean, to be fair, we did have AC. But I think out of the last 4 years, this to me, this year, I would say would be the best year next to the first one, which we had for the last, you know, X amount of years with AC under center, having Kevin Glenn. Just so happens, by the way, that the home opener is also against the same home opener as last year, the Ottawa Red Blacks. And they pulled one hell of an upset last year. They pulled the season. They took the season series from us, I think, for the first time ever, if I remember correctly, at least a three-game series from us. What do you expect? I mean, can the team this week pull a carbon copy of what they did last week? Obviously, with a few minor tweaks.
Absolutely. If last week wasn't convincing enough for you, I think you'll be very impressed this week with what the Alouettes have to offer. Because again, it's going to essentially be the same thing. Like, we are going into this game healthy. That's one thing that it's rare that you go into something like this relatively healthy. I mean, last year, quarterbacks were dropping like flies. So the fact that we escaped at Winnipeg relatively unscathed. And again, just having that experience that a Kevin Glenn brings to the table, you just can't put a price on that. This is a guy that's here to lead. And again, so what if he was a perennial backup the past couple of years? So what if he's the quote-unquote insurance policy? You know what? That's in the past. As of right now, this is our starting quarterback. And if, as Alouettes fans, you can't be excited or at least feeling a little more relieved, considering the carousel of quarterbacks we've gone through over the past couple of years, the fact that we finally have a decent, consistent starting quarterback.
Right. Yeah, carousel, it's been a circus.
it really has. It's sorry to say, but I mean, it's just been, my gosh. We were getting to the point where it was going to be, well, the fan in section X, row 5, please come down and suit up for the quarterback position. But now we have a bona fide star in Kevin Glenn. We have a true veteran presence in Kevin Glenn. We have someone who can take this team and lead them properly. Like, that alone should give fans a sense of relief and definitely a sense of hope, especially now he's got some great weapons at his side, both on the ground and in the air. Mm-hmm. That same killer defense that this team has been known for the past couple of years. I mean, like I said, a lot of people have been sleeping on this team, and they really shouldn't. Now, again, they're going to be playing Ottawa, the defending Eastern champions. They've clearly got their act together. They're certainly not an expansion franchise by any stretch. They're going to be coming in hot as well, having bested the Eskimos last week in a OT thriller. And they, too, I think, will really want to put their mark on this game. And it's going to be interesting because they won't have their veteran quarterback in Henry Burris, as he's on the one-game injured list with a finger injury.
Yeah.
So now the Red Blacks are going to turn to Trevor Harris, who they're one of their prime acquisitions in free agency this past offseason. And he played pretty great on this past Saturday. Managed to get the team into overtime, managed to win the game. And again, they're going to want to carry that momentum with them as well into Montreal. So it's going to make for a very entertaining affair this coming Thursday.
It's true. I mean, and the quarterbacks alone last week for Ottawa had over 500 yards of passing offense. That is something that, you know, this would be probably, yeah, I said, it would be a very big test for the Alouettes defense. If they're able to keep Trevor Harris in check, actually, now that I think of it, I don't even know who the third string quarterbacks are. Who is it going to be that's going to back up Trevor Harris since Smiling Hank's on the one game?
It'll be either Danny O'Brien or Brock Jensen. Okay. That'll be suiting up. I don't know who I believe if you were to go by the depth chart, it would be O'Brien who'd be the backup now to Trevor Harris.
Right.
But I know both of these guys played in preseason and they both had their moments of brilliance. So I wouldn't be surprised to see. I actually am of the two, I would be a little bit higher on Brock Jensen because he has actual NFL experience. He's He was a highly touted college quarterback, and for the Red Blacks to actually get this guy was a major coup. Like, I think the real thought was, this is the guy that could be the future quarterback for Ottawa, right, when Smiling Hank calls it a career. But lo and behold, they go out and they get Trevor Harris now. So now, if Brock Jensen's really going to do something, he's going to have to make every opportunity that he gets counts when he's given the chance to go behind center.
Owlet's Flight Deck presents Just the Stats with CFL statistician Steve Daniel.
Happy Canada Day, Steve.
Happy to you, too.
First week of the CFL season is now finished. Anything unique pop up this weekend before we get to this week's topics?
Well, we used our brand new stat system for the first time ever and collected a lot more interesting data right from the press box. Our crews did really well, and we were pretty happy about getting a lot of stuff now automatically instead of having to do it after the game. That was a big success. Plus, three teams that won away from home to start the weekend, and the Lions upset the first time there had been all four, I think, since 2003.
As I mentioned just at the very beginning, we got Canada Day this week. It is obviously a very huge holiday here in Canada, but sometimes we are able to mix in a little bit of football with it, aren't we? When it comes to Canada Day and the CFL, there is a little bit of history, if I'm not mistaken. When it comes to it, where has the CFL weaved its way into that holiday?
Well, I've asked some of our office staff, hey, how long does our Canada Day tradition go? Because most of them are a little younger than I am. Mm-hmm. And they're thinking, oh, in the 60s and the 50s. It's always been a wonderful time. But the first Canada Day game in CFL history is 1984.
Really?
Because our schedules, they started a lot later than that because teams used to play six games. Now they play 18, so you got to start them earlier. So 84 it was.
And there are some very, very memorable games, obviously, in Canada Day history in the CFL. One of them for me specifically is back in 2010, the Grey Cup rematch between Saskatchewan and Montreal went into overtime, and the amazing, amazing catch at the back of the end zone by SJ Green for a two-point convert. What an absolutely amazing game. I mean, it's any of them stand out to you specifically, or any other interesting tidbits?
Well, let me put it this way. There's been, 5,400 games in our history. Mm-hmm. And if that game that you're talking about in 2010, mm-hmm, between, Saskatchewan 54, Montreal 51, if that's not in the top five, none of them are. I mean, Saskatchewan scored 30 points in the second half and 14 more in overtime. Holy cow.
Yeah.
It was just a game for the ages when you throw in the Green catches you suggest. And even the call of that, mm-hmm, was spectacular. It was a doubleheader that day, and it was literally a football fest with, 161 points worth of CFL football.
And if I'm not mistaken, and I know I didn't mention, we were talking about this before, I think obviously with the amount of points that was scored, it has to be up there as one of the all-time greats when it comes to most points scored in a game in CFL history, if I'm not mistaken.
I am just flipping to that very record because I knew you would mention it. And the most points scored in a CFL game is 111. And if you can believe this score, Toronto beat BC 68-43.
Now, was that recently, within the past 20 years?
1990. And believe it or not, it was not an overtime game. But the 2010 Canada Day game is right up there at number three with 105 points. That's a lot of points.
Yeah. Speaking of overtime, as we were just mentioning about that game, we happened to bring it up. We noticed that there was an overtime game that started off this season. And we wanted to try to find a little bit more history about overtime in the CFL. Now, there have been more than one different type, different types of, I guess we could say, overtime and how they are played. Is that right?
Absolutely. They drew the guidelines for having a regular season overtime game from playoff history, just in terms of how they would divide the game into two halves. So rather than two 10-minute halves like they do in postseason play, they started overtime in 1986, two 5-minute halves. You could have a tie. Mm-hmm. Pretty simple. No mandatory anything. With a kickoff at the start of each. So 2 5-minute halves, 1986.
So it was actually, unlike today, they had to go and kick off, and they had to go the entire length of the field. Is that correct? Like similar to what they do in the NFL?
It's just an extension of the game, mm-hmm, with a time limit, at the end of which, if it was tied, it was a tie.
Okay.
But there was nothing about having to go for anything. And that lasted from 1986 to 1999, and then everything changed.
No, you mentioned that it did change. What were the different types of overtime, I guess we could say, rules compared to what they were in 1986 compared to what they are today?
Well, in 2000, they thought, let's jazz this up. And they even gave a standings point for an overtime loss that year. And so they switched to this alternating possessions format. But I think, as you suggested in some of the time we've been talking earlier, that it was a little bit like an NCAA shootout.
Right.
And so there were four each, and then that lasted a year because it took too long. And then they had this sort of alternating possessions, only two of them. And then that lasted till 2009. Then they made a little bit of a change, which I'm sure you can remember because it's right in front of us now.
Right, right.
That's the two-point convert thing.
Yes. Yep, having to go.
Boy, that's exciting.
Totally a different strategy now. I mean, it's sure it's mandated. You have to do it. But yet, even though the other team knows it's coming, not always a given thing. I mean, but speaking of 2 points, and we're not talking about the extra point convert 2 points. We're actually talking about a specific safety this past weekend that happened at BMO Field for the first game of the season. That happened to be the very first points that were scored in at BMO Stadium in the regular season. When it comes to first scores, Steve, at new stadiums, when it comes to their inaugural games, what type of history do we have?
Well, if you go back to some of our early stadiums, we go back all the way to 1907 in the East. And back then, it's funny, actually, they would call it an aerial game. Today's aerial attack is passing, right? You got
right.
Ricky Ray and those kinds of players. Back then, aerial meant kicking the ball. People would kick on first down, second down. So when you look at these stadiums, then the first points, I'll bet you anything, a lot of them are singles.
Okay.
The classic Canadian football rouge. Most people don't know why it's called rouge. It's a fairly interesting story.
That I don't know. Go ahead.
Well, rouge is French for red.
Yes.
And the story that I've heard, urban legend or otherwise, is the scoreboard would be lit up in red if a single was scored. Now, I don't know how true that is, but it is the one story I've heard that has at least any credibility at all. So I'd say a lot of these stadiums opened with singles and not field goals, because field goals are tough.
Recently, do you have a history of what the actual first scores were, let's say, at, well, I guess we could say the most recent new-ish stadium, TD right. Place, but we also have the new one in Hamilton. What were the first scores there?
I have the one in front of me. I had a better one in front of me.
Okay.
Investors Group Field.
Okay.
In Winnipeg. So here is their first home game, right in front of me here. And, yes, Investors Group Field. And I was actually there, and here we have a field goal by Winnipeg. And so that was, you know, pretty standard.
Yeah.
You don't always get these touchdowns at opening drives. There's a stat that I keep actually quite religiously called first possession touchdowns.
Okay.
And most teams get one about every six games. They don't start well, but they finish strong.
Okay.
And also track when the points are scored and which quarter attracts the most points. And always, always the fourth quarter.
Kind of makes sense.
It does, because there's more plays in the second and fourth quarter.
Yeah.
So you have that field opening with a field goal and BMO with a safety. Not bad.
No, not at all.
Somebody did something last week, which I'm going to have to trace, which is going to take a while.
Which is?
Vidal Hazelton.
Which is what? What did he do?
Scored two touchdowns in 46 seconds. Wow.
Yeah.
At BMO Field. So that's the one that stands out from that game. Now I got to go back and find out if there's ever been two quicker by the same player.
Keep us up to date. I'm sure we'll love to see what type of historical items you can find them.
Those are the kind of things that make this job interesting.
I'm sure. All the best for this Canada Day weekend. Keep safe, and we will talk to you soon.
Same to you, Tim. Thank you very much.
The Alouettes have won the last 6 of 8 home openers, dating back to what's the date here? I can't see the dates. Either way, do the math. Since 08. Alouettes at home and home openers are 36-25. They're 23-10 all time at Percival Molson. Let's see. I guess the second year in a row was they're playing Ottawa, fourth and sort of. And here's a really, if you like stats, here's one. And besides, you know, listening to our here's the stats thing each week, this will be the third time that the Alouettes have played on June 30th. I would ask you, Cliff, when the last time it was that they played, but I know you and I didn't talk about it prior, so. 2011. Luckily, they're 2-0 on that date. Don't mean anything. Of everything this week, and we could have talked about it before. I think one of the things that was announced by the looks of things that we may have a change at our third down back. And I meant to mention that prior when we were talking about the Winnipeg game. It just seemed, at least last week, Brandon Bridge just didn't seem to cut it as our third down back. You know, so after so many years of being used to having AD Mack, he made his, you know, he had made his mistake. So, but what do you think about the team switching over to Vernon Adams Jr. As their third down back?
At this point, why not? I mean, you know what you have in Brandon Bridge. He is definitely a talented quarterback. He actually did manage to score Montreal's first touchdown of 2016 by pushing it in from the 1 yard line against Winnipeg. So you know what you have more or less with Bridge. So Vernon Adams is still very much an untested commodity.
Right.
We don't know what we truly have with him. And even short yardage situations, it's not going to tell the entire story, obviously. But look at everything that Montreal had to do just to get this guy. You might as well find a way to get him into a game somehow. So, I mean, if it has to be, you know, third and one, or, you know, lining up on the goal line to try and get in and get a touchdown that way, then so be it. I say give him every opportunity to get in there. If he can get some reps, so much the better. But short yardage is better than no yardage, as far as I'm concerned. So you may as well take a chance. Yeah, fortunately, it means that Brandon Bridge will likely not dress, which is unfortunate. But right. When you're carrying four quarterbacks, I mean, there's only so many roster spots. So I mean, you got to find a way to make it work. So invariably, someone's going to have to draw the short end of the stick and sit this one out. In this case, it looks like it's going to be Bridge that'll be sitting out. And that's probably just how it's going to be like in 2016 for the Alouettes.
Right. And it's, as I said, I don't want to sound like a broken record. I happened to mention it last week. It's, you know, as you just mentioned too, and touched on, is how are we going to get these players, you know, four quarterbacks on the roster? You got to get the reps somehow. I mean, it's not that, I guess on that goal line, push on the first down, it wasn't very good. I'm sure it's something that they do practice almost every day when it comes to short yarder situations. You know, he was able to get in for the other touchdown, and then I guess when you saw that play originally, was it something where you saw it and he was like, why didn't they go off to the left or to the right? You know, maybe we're so used to seeing the other, you know, like AD Mack or whomever was doing the third down do something completely different. I mean, it's, do you think just one game and pulling him is it fair to do such a thing? I mean, I understand it's Ottawa coming up. You do want to try to have your best team out there, but usually you would think that you would give a player a little bit more than just what, two, three plays to get things right.
I don't think it's necessarily about trying to be fair or anything like that. I think it's just really, really, truly, it is a matter of seeing what all you have. I mean, like I said, you can only really dress three quarterbacks a game. So someone's just got to have to, you know, sit this one out.
Right.
And I think Bridge was not terrible last week in Winnipeg. Like the fact that he's got the height makes him great for these third and short situations, as far as trying to get that extra yard. Because again, he's got a big frame that's got to fly across the 1 yard line just to get that first down, or in this case, a touchdown. Something that Vernon Adams doesn't have because he's a fair bit shorter than what Bridge is. So maybe now we're going to see a little bit more creativity as far as that goes, because he sure as heck can't just push his way through a whole bunch of linemen and hope to score a touchdown. So we may have to see a little razzle dazzle out of this youngster. And quite frankly, I'm curious to see what's going to be like for him. I think it's going to be a great experience for him. I think it's something that can only be positive as far as I'm concerned. And again, more learning. Like, this is what it's all about. This is what he came here for, is to learn how to be a professional quarterback. And this is how you're going to do it.
It's true. I mean, Vernon Adams is only 5'11", 200, at least is what he listed. He's listed on the Alouettes website. Bridge is obviously, he's a non-import. And he's 6'5", 235. I mean, very, very similar to what AD Mack was. So it's, I'm interested. I'm curious to know. No, and we did come off pretty well unscathed when it came to injuries. Just at the top of my head, this does this seem to be that this could be a ratio thing to you? Because if you think about it, I mean, again, Canadian versus import, or am I just grasping at straws?
A bit, because the quarterback position doesn't have a import designation, so it's not even a...
There we have. That's true.
It really doesn't make a difference one way or another. So, I mean, anyone who's thinking that it's because it's, you know, because Bridge is Canadian or anything like that, it really has nothing to do with that. When it comes to the quarterback position, it's not a ratio breaker by any stretch. So it really is coming down now to, okay, we know what we have with Bridge. We still don't quite know exactly what all we have with Adams. So let's throw him out there and see what happens. I mean, it's, again, at this point too, like, unless, and I you know, I'm not even going to say, I'm not going to jinx anything. I'm just going to say, I want to see what Vernon Adams can do with any and every opportunity that he gets to get onto the field. So that's what's going to be, that's what I'm going to be watching for this Thursday, is just to see what exactly Adams can do with the limited amount of time he's going to have to show himself, essentially.
Right. Just for those who happen to follow this type of thing, looks like the line so far, at least through five dimes, the game is started out at Pick'em. Right now, I think it looks like Ottawa is favored by one, so they're minus one for the game. What are your thoughts on the game? Let's get your pick and possible prediction. I hate projecting scores, but
yeah, I'm not a big fan of projecting scores myself. Yeah. But again, it's going to be Montreal's home opener. You know that they come, they show out for their fans, and the fans will come out and be ready to support this team. And I wouldn't necessarily say we've got a rivalry going with Ottawa just yet, even though there's less than 200 kilometers separating the two cities, and there's already a bit of a rivalry, if you will, when it comes to Montreal and Ottawa's hockey teams. We don't still quite have that sort of hatred or whatever you want to call it with the Red Blacks and their fans, but I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what both these teams can do. I mean, Ottawa has something to prove as far as they went to the Grey Cup, and they would have won it had a couple more things gone their way. And I'm willing to bet too, they were not terribly impressed with a little stunt of the participation ribbons that their fans had to endure. So I imagine them coming in with a bit of a chip on their shoulder. And at the end of the day, Trevor Harris, it's going to be his show now, or at least this game. So you won't have that veteran presence in Henry Burris, but you're definitely going to have a top-notch quarterback that, again, is very much going to be the future of this Ottawa franchise. So he's going to want to show the fans as well that he belongs in the discussion. And I'm definitely looking forward to what's going to be, I think, a very tight match as far as a win. It really is a pick'em. Like, Vegas was not kidding, because this could go either way. Like, I'd say defensively Montreal would take it. Offensively, I'd give a slight edge to Ottawa. I mean, it really could come. It's going to come down to, I think, who's going to make the fewest mistakes. That's really what's going to be the determining factor for this game on Thursday.
For me, I think the defense is going to be solid. I think right off in the first quarter alone will tell us how the game's going to go offensively for the Alouettes. You know, we've just seen too many zeros on the scoreboard in the past few years when it came to the offense. And you know, Ottawa is, you know, they're the defending division champion. They are the team to beat. I mean, I'm optimistic, but yet I'm also, you know, I'm very cautious about this game. I'm just wanting to again, as I said at the beginning of the show, this will be a very big test. I hope that the lines that are up currently that reflect the game, yeah, reflect the game properly. So it's I don't want to be a homer here, but I would love them to win. But I'm just being very, very cautious about this. You know, obviously we want the Alouettes to win every single game that they have at home or during the year too. So it's that's really all I can say. I just hope they win. I just hope they can win.
We'll put it this way: no one gave them a snowball's chance in hell against Winnipeg for any number of reasons, and look what happened. I mean, I really felt that Montreal could have won by a hell of a lot more than what they did.
Agreed.
But like I said, there was just a couple times where they just, I hate saying this, I really do, but they really need to stop stepping on their own toes. They really need to tighten up and knock it off with these mental miscues. And I think if they can do that, if they can find a way to sort of reduce the number of, just like I said, minor mistakes that they tend to do, that they tend to just get caught up in the moment with, because again, Ottawa is that kind of team that's going to take advantage of any mistakes like that, because they too, like they've got an offensive juggernaut. They've got some great receivers. They've got, again, even when their starting quarterback goes down, they've got a very dependable backup in place. I found their defense was a little bit porous last week, but I mean, they too can they can frighten you as well, because last year their defense was outstanding, just simply outstanding. Yeah. And that's pretty much what got them to the Grey Cup more than anything else.
Right.
So, I mean, this could actually be one of those games where you'd see like scores in the single digits. And that's not because there's no offensive power, but I mean, like, these two teams, if their defense is on point, it could definitely be a very tight affair. And like I said, it's going to come down to, in my opinion, who's going to make the fewest mistakes, who can keep the referees' flags in their pockets. I think that's really what's going to be the deciding factor for this game.
Yeah, it should be a good game. And I know it's one of the weird things that I'm actually looking forward to. Yeah, if anybody remembered from the preseason game, if they had that new scoreboard that was above the main Jumbotron, I'm actually very interested to seeing how they're going to integrate. I'm such a nerd. To integrate the stats into this new stats board. I'm really curious to see. Did they have one in Winnipeg?
Not really, no. They the scoreboard was huge. I mean, I would say it's comparable to what you would have seen in Toronto, for example, back when they played at the Rogers Centre.
Right.
There's a fair bit of information on there, but truth be told, the only stat I was taking care of in Winnipeg was taking a look at the 50-50 board. And that was one nice thing about the weather delay. It gave the fans a lot of time to buy beer and buy 50-50 tickets. And when all said and done, I'm not kidding, the 50-50 was up to $90,000.
Oh, we're never going to get that in Montreal. I don't know what it is about the Western teams and their monster jackpots.
Oh, I was just thinking, could you imagine if I'd won that and I get to take home $48,000?
Yeah. No, I know. It's, you know what, to be fair, I don't know if they do it at Impact Games. When they did it, when the Blue Jays were here in town, the 50-50, somebody walked away with over $100,000. So we can do it for baseball for some reason, but for I don't know, for the Alouettes, they just maybe a lot of people don't know about it. You know, it would be nice to walk away with a nice chunk of change. I mean, they do it all the time in the West. Tons of money in the West, man.
Oh, my goodness. I remember, was it 2 years ago, Edmonton, they got up to like $300,000, the 50-50, because people would buy tickets and no one would claim it.
Yeah,
so great. It would just roll over to the next game and the next game.
I think somebody walked away with more than $250,000. So it was something stupid. It really was something stupid.
It's pretty close, that's for sure. I mean,
And the odds, I would think the odds are, you have better odds at this, I would think, than winning the lotto.
Oh, there's no question. It's not like a league wide or a country wide sort of thing. It really is within the stadium. So I mean, the more tickets you buy, ideally the more the odds are in your favor of getting the winning number. Exactly. So it's, I always tell people, like, if you go to a football game, any football game, no matter where it is, and they're offering 50-50 tickets, you gotta do it. You gotta, like, for $5, $10, $20, your whole life could change. Yeah. For the better.
Oh, no kidding. Should be a good week. Really excited to see the opener. I know, Cliff, you'll be at your normal seat this week, right?
Oh, you better believe it.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely looking forward to it, of course. I mean, there's something about the home opener. I mean, Alouettes games, it's a great experience no matter what. And but the home opener, to me, is just – it really is the kickoff to summer. It really is something that says, okay, you're in Montreal. You're in the greatest city in the world. You're watching the Alouettes. It's warm outside. You're surrounded by a whole bunch of crazy, passionate fans. You know what? Don't take my word for it. Let's talk to our good friend Kirk Cousins on this.
You like that? You like that?
What better way to end the show? Perfect, 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 Cliffy. Again, I will see you. I will see you this week. Everybody, enjoy the upcoming holiday for Canada Day. And we will see you, obviously, for our next show. So for everybody here at Alouettes Flight Deck, for Cliffy Day, I'm Tim Capper. We're on Final Approach. Take off.